This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Russ Lockwood grew up in a small Canadian town of Winfield, British Columbia, where he developed a passion for science, engineering, and space exploration. A couple of weeks ago, he arrived back on Earth after completing a 120-day-long NASA Mars simulation mission in Hawaii called High Seas. High Seas includes four research missions of extended duration from 4 months to a full year in what is called an analog of Mars missions. The High Seas project is funded by NASA's Human Research Program. Russ Lockwood shared his experiences on a blog throughout the Mars mission, and he appeared by video at Logicon 2014. Logicon brings members of the scientific community together with the general public to celebrate logic, critical thinking, and the scientific method. You can find Logicon video on YouTube.
I spoke with Russ Lockwood last week, and here's that interview. Russ, how did you come to be in on this High Seas mission?
I was working at the time at the University of Alberta Observatory when the first call for applications came out, and it seemed like I met all the criteria, so I applied. I didn't make the final selection round for the first High Seas mission, but when applications came out for the second High Seas mission, they asked me to reapply as a highly qualified candidate.
Were there some rigorous interviews, psychological testing, and all this type of thing?
There were interviews. I think primarily they did profiles of our own like professional backgrounds. We did have an interview that they asked about certain events in our lifetimes that we'd consider influential over the possibility of becoming a Martian astronaut.
What does practicing living on Mars mean, like in an everyday sense? What was it like to actually practice living on Mars?
Well, there were a number of rules that we had to follow. In particular, there was a no human contact rule. So the dome itself is isolated way up on the side of the Mauna Loa volcano where it's virtually inaccessible. And we couldn't go outside without wearing a spacesuit. So we were really just confined to the dome and confined to walking around in the spacesuits.
What did it mean for things like meal preparation and sleeping and waking and getting exercise?
It meant that we were at the mercy of the power system. So we had a solar panel array that charged batteries for use at night. So we could do everything during the day, like cooking and exercising. The first High Seas mission in particular was studying what foods Martians would bring, Martian astronauts would bring along with them to their space base there. And we ate primarily dehydrated foods, fruits, meats, vegetables, plus shelf-stable things like pasta and rice and cookies and stuff like that. But in general, living on Mars wasn't too much different from living on Earth.
What was the experience of the 4 months like for you personally?
120 days seems like a long time, but it really did go by very quickly, especially once we fell into a routine involving our work. And it just seemed like the weekdays would fly by with all the tasks that we were assigned to do from our mission support team, and that the weekends really were too short as well, just because we spent all of our weekends emailing home, taking pictures and sending them on to friends and family and that kind of a thing. So it really did fly by very quickly.
There are obviously psychological and social challenges in living and working with other people in confined spaces and that type of thing. What were some of those and how did they emerge and how did you deal with them?
Most of the challenges that we faced were conflicts involving the actual professional aspects of the mission. So we were assigned stressors, like geological tasks, where we go outside in the spacesuits and do surveying of the terrain and mapping of the terrain and take geological samples for analysis, this kind of thing. And typically, if we had conflicts, they centered around everyone's basically professional opinion on how to get those tasks done. Now, as far as our personal conflicts go, there were so few that, you know, it's actually quite surprising. Despite the professional conflicts, we'd always sit down at meals together, enjoy a few good laughs, watch movies after dinner, and that kind of a thing. So we really had very close relationships with everybody, very close friendships, and And really, we could forget about our professional conflicts at the end of every day.
Was there a method introduced by which you either journaled or listed what you were experiencing using a piece of software? How did you provide the data to the scientists that are looking at the experience of humans living in this kind of manner?
Well, every day we had 5 daily surveys that we'd have to do throughout the day, and 3 of those were at the end of the day. And like you say, one of those included free-form writing, where we wrote down events that may have influenced our emotions that day and that kind of a thing. And the really interesting thing about that is it's a private company that was hired to do robotic analysis of keywords in our entries. So those entries were actually evaluated by automated software that would pull out how we were feeling and try and give the researchers an idea so that they can compare that to the surveys that we were doing, because surveys are actually very monotonous to do. So the idea is that in the future, it will just be a completely freeform-based input for future astronauts, just regular journaling, instead of, you know, clicking on radio buttons to tell, you know, how angry I felt today, how happy I felt today, and that kind of a thing.
You told Global News that ultimately there were a lot of challenges along the way, but that you, as a group, you learned a lot of lessons on how to deal with those. Can you share one or two of the kind of top learnings in terms of the lessons that came out of this mission for you?
One particular event always stands out in my mind when I'm asked this question, and it was a simple routine system reset that we were asked to do by one of our mission supporters, and it caused a power outage that knocked our communications offline for 4 days. So there were some unintended consequences of this power outage. And in particular, the crew very quickly got together to solve this issue. The power system itself failed because a backup battery had shorted, and the backup battery responsible for rebooting the system was not charged as a result. And so what the crew had to do is pull the batteries out of the spacesuit backpacks and wire them together to get 48 volts and use that to reboot the system. It was really an incredible kind of rescue and recovery. And it wasn't until a few days later that we started seeing more and more network disruptions until we went completely black. But not only were we working as the crew, but we were also working with our mission support team. And that was through a 40-minute delay. So we were simulating the distance between Earth and Mars at their largest distance, which means that it takes 20 minutes for our communications to go from Mars to Earth and 20 minutes for their responses to come back to us from Earth to Mars.
Did you ever wake up in the morning and sometimes actually feel as though you were on Mars?
Those feelings for me typically came right as I was going to bed at night. And it's funny, you sit in the dome and, you know, Mars has weather just similar to Earth. It has wind, it has dust storms and these things. But laying in bed at night, the habitat is completely quiet. There's no human activity to be heard. And all that you can really hear is the wind on the slope and the occasional rainstorm that blows past. And there were nights where I said to myself, this really is as close as it gets to being on Mars without actually going the distance.
Will you be on future high seas missions, or are these a kind of a one mission for one team kind of approach?
Yeah, the idea with high seas is that once the crew is finished, they'll be selecting a completely new crew just so that they get comparable data. If we resend comparable groups or experienced groups, then they're getting data that they don't particularly want. But that doesn't mean that I can't participate as a mission supporter in future missions. And there were actually some of the past high seas crew members who were helping us out on the mission support teams by doing shift work to stay in touch with us throughout the mission.
There seems to be a significant amount of interest in Mars, and this is coming, I think, partly because of the NASA rover that is there and this type of thing. What are your thoughts about the future and Mars and the possibilities there?
I think Mars is one of those promising things, an adventure, promise of resources, promise of colonization. And there's lots of people who like to write about the future of the human race in terms of our ability to colonize other planets. And Mars would really be that first test bed, the one planet in our solar system that we could go to and maybe not live comfortably for the first 100 years, but with practice actually set up bases there and eventually set up sustainable colonies there and really have that that second home, as it were.
Ross, is there anything else you'd like to add to this conversation?
No, I think that we covered all the bases. I really enjoyed speaking with you. You had excellent questions.
Well, thanks a lot for taking the time to do this. And I wish we could have done this while you were actually in the dome, so to speak. You must have conducted media interviews there too.
Well, the media interviews that we did while we were in the domes obviously had to be behind that 40-minute delay. A particularly good example is the CTV Edmonton segment that they put together. They asked me a number of questions and had me sit and record my answers with the camera that I brought along with me, along with a lot of B-roll footage. And they put together a really incredible montage that impressed me greatly.
Well, thanks again.
Ross Lockwood recently completed a 120-day-long NASA Mars simulation mission called High Seas 2. Ross is currently completing a PhD in condensed matter physics at the University of Alberta. You can find him online at rosslockwood.com.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.